Wow. Mapping the culinary world. We're in Mali. And I am there with 34 from 34 Questions podcast. Definitely check out his podcast. It is really great to hear the insights and the motivations of everyday people. And you can be on his show. Just make sure you go to 34questions.com, and there's tons of interesting episodes. It is so fun to hear what other folks are kind of either they've gone through or they're going through. And then it's also interesting to, hear what other people's vulnerabilities are. I know mine are listed there. I was on his show. But yeah, it is so cool to hear very real conversations with folks. And we're obviously going to Mali for Mapping the Culinary World. And so if you want the recipes from this episode, you're going to have to sign up for our newsletter. Our newsletter is in the middle of our homepage, culinaryconvo.com. Make sure you're following all of our socials. If you want to support the show, go to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support. I know it's long. I'm about to have a Patreon. We'll see how things go. But definitely check out our website. And then also enjoy this episode and all the other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And then watch the shows on YouTube. That way you can see what the foods look like and see if you want to make it. And then you get the newsletter. You get the newsletter, you know how to make it, and then you become a foodie like the rest of us, or you're already in with the rest of us. And welcome. And so we'll get on to Mali after a word from our sponsor. Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Rehm. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody, welcome to Mapping the Culinary World. This time I have turned the tables on 34. How's it going, 34? Yeah, he's on. Look at
I'm
that.
Going, doing well, man, doing well. You know, it's half of the work week, and I'm just happy that we're getting past hump day. So
oh, I
thank
know,
you for having
man.
Me on. Definitely
yeah,
appreciate it.
absolutely. I'm excited because, like I said, your podcast, 34 Questions. One, everybody go and subscribe to 34 Questions. Love the format. Love how you talk to anybody and everybody, and you basically get their perspective on their own introspection. It's really great how they get to talk about kind of their lives, but they get to kind of, they really do give their point of view, right? Their perspective. And so when did you come up with the idea for 34 Questions?
So the story behind the idea coming up for me, I don't know if you believe this, but some people say if you're up like super late at night, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., the energy or the thoughts just move differently because everybody else is sleeping. So there's a lot more ways for creative ideas to kind of enter your brain. Anyways, I was working a graveyard shift, self-driving cars. I don't know if you have them in where you're at right now. But that was the job I was working at, and wow. I was working the graveyard shift, just driving, and listened to a lot of podcasts, thought yeah. about, hey, maybe this is something I could do, but I really wanted to fit whatever my personal mission was in life, and yeah. I think I really just enjoy hearing other people's stories, and I don't think that people have the space and time to do that often enough, especially with other people, maybe with close friends, but never really with a stranger sometimes. And I'm honestly surprised that you came on my show as a stranger. I didn't really yeah. know you that well, but you know, you were open enough, and I am deeply appreciative of everyone like yourself who come on and just let me hear exactly what their thoughts are, what their perspectives are, without feeling like they need to prove something or they need to right. be someone that they aren't. And yeah, so that's how it came
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Make it to where it's not a 3-point paragraph. Do you remember that from school? a three-point paragraph. The first part is, what are you trying to answer? The second part is the other side. And then the last part is your conclusion and your side. And it seems like that, right? Like, when you talk to people in everyday situations, there's that kind of thing of, like, I have to give my view or my perspective, and it has to be the top one or the better one or whatever it may be. And even though it's not stated, right? Like, even though, like, you know, even though it's not, it's just kind of like, oh, here's this random person, and I need to be able to, like, somehow hold my own in some way, right? Like, whether it's intellectually, like, ethically, I have no idea. And that's what I loved about listening to your show. Like, so I got into it because of Andrew from Our Last Meal. He told me about it, and I was like, okay, great. Yeah, shout out Andrew. And I was like, I'll take a listen. And then I started listening, and yeah, I was like, these are people's, like, perspectives, and it's not in this lens of, like, trying to force anything or be a, like, oh, this is the way you gotta go or the way you do things. It really is just an introspection on them and how they can say their perspective. And as confusing as, you know, maybe some of that sounds, you listen to it and it's not confusing at all. You ask them how they're doing, you ask them, you know, what's, like, the hardest time you've been through in life, and and it's just telling their story, and it's beautiful. It is great. Just like Our Last Meal, it is humanity in between the little earmuffs here. It is wonderful. It is great. Listen to all the episodes. Check them out. 34 Questions, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and then 34questions.com, right? The number 34 and then questions.
Yep, yeah. 34questions.com. 34questions.com.
Check them out there as well. get on an episode. You can do it. You're an average day Joe. Get on there. Average day Jan. I don't care. You get on the episode. Bam. You're there.
Yeah.
Right?
And
you get to talk to them. Yeah. Get to talk to 34.
I appreciate you framing it that way, but I definitely think you're allowing me to get to know you, and I think that's
true.
That's what I get out of it. But I do like how you brought up the fact that there is something, as we get older, that it seems like conversations feel like people need to prove their value, or like show that this is who I am, and I get that vibe a lot of the time in regular life. So that's why the platform to me is really important, is because, like, you don't need to do that. And I wish people didn't have to feel that way all the time. But I do get that a lot. So that's why it's made. So
Yeah. And hey, like I said, check it out, everybody. It is wonderful. 34 questions. Well, 34, I mean, we're in Mali. How did that happen? How did we get here? How did this happen? I've already said it before. Mali, I would have spelt it incorrectly, for one, if somebody had, like, you know, I don't know, if I was on Wheel of Fortune or something, I would have spelt it incorrectly. It is a country, and obviously Western Africa here. You mentioned before the show, don't know much about it. I didn't either, like, at all. I think the main thing is, like, you look at it on the map, and the main vibe I get from it is, like, half of it looks like nature, greenlands, like, you know, your typical West Gold Coast Africa. And then the other half, it's like Sahara, like desert. This is going to be, yeah, like, how did that happen? How did they split this country? And you know, nobody should take offense to this, but it's an oddly shaped country. It's not in a perfect circle, kind of like orb type of thing. It's not cut square. It's like both. It's kind of a little bit of both. So like the boundaries and all those things, I'm sure colonialization and some of those things, they have their hands in it, I'm sure. But interesting, like, have not really heard much about this country. Don't know much going into it. I mean, what are your thoughts? Are they similar to mine, probably, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think I recognized Mali as a place beforehand. It's not like I know all the countries in the world, you know?
Right.
So But just
once
the
again,
fact that
thank you, American education system. We have done a wonderful job at doing this. Because because I'm the same way. I would have never. I'd have been like, oh, that's part of like Nigeria or something, right? And they're like, that is Mali. It's like, okay, yeah, but yeah.
No, but I'm super interested into learning more about cultures around the world. So I'm looking at the map as well. So just the fact that they are separated between like this desert area and then also like foresty area, I'm super curious what kind of foods you came up on during your research, because I feel like two different areas are gonna have completely different cuisines almost. That's what I'm expecting. So let's see what happens.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that was kind of my thing, was like, is it just the green part is feeding the desert part, or is it the desert part that's gonna help with all the land going towards the coast? Like, I have no idea. Well, that's why we're here. That's why we're doing this. And let me tell you, it's a little bit interesting. Just say that it's one of those things where, like I said, colonialization, different things, they get their hands in it a little bit. But overall, it is an astounding country. Like you said, learning about other cultures, populations throughout the world. I think as an American, right, you grow up kind of like, I wouldn't use the word privilege, so to speak, but you have this weird mentality where it's like, oh, everybody's looking at us, right? Like, that's kind of the way that it goes. Like, oh, the world revolves around us, right? Because we are here, and I'm sure there's other countries that's that way, right? Like, if it, you know, whatever it may be. But like, when you're a kid, you think that way. Once you hit adulthood, you're like, yeah, I am a speck. Like, this is crazy. What is going on? But yeah, so it's like seeking out these other cultures, figuring out how they go about things, what they've got for foods. It expands kind of everything going on. And plus, with climate change and things going on, I bet Mali has a lot of vegetation and things that could grow in high temperatures. That could help us out pretty greatly, if you ask me. So we need to become good friends with these people. They're going to share us some knowledge. And so kind of going over that knowledge, first things up here, where it's located. Definitely Mali, or the Republic of Mali, is a landlocked country in West Africa. Mali is the eighth largest country in Africa. So land size, pretty big, pretty big area. The currency is the West African franc. So some French colonialization there. Yeah, and you can kind of see their money, man. I've been saying this the last couple episodes for mapping the culinary world. Other countries have such playful, colorful money, and it is so much better than what we've got. I've got a social media post coming out soon where it's like all of our bills are like this weird green gray, and most of them, if not all of them, I have not looked in a little while, they all got slave owners on them. So why do we do that? Why do we do that? Like, why don't we have, you know, it's hard though, because like, I know I had talked about it with a buddy of the pod, Joel. Let's say you put a national park on there, Yosemite, right? That was once native land, right? So then it's like, oh, what are you doing putting that on there? And then, yeah, so it's like, I don't know. Some of these countries, they put like seashells, they put like animals and different things. I know for us, maybe an eagle, that was going to be like a big thing. But at the same time, like, I don't know. Is an eagle bad now? I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't. I know we're not supposed to, you know, they're protected. I know that. But it's just like, yeah, I don't know. But they've got cool money. And I would think that would help with the security of it, right? Like the whole counterfeitedness. It's like, yeah, you change the colors up. You have to have the right tints at the right times. Why we got boring money? Why do we do that?
I don't know why with the paper money, it's pretty boring. I want to do point out, and maybe you remember this too, back in like 2000, all of a sudden we've been having these crazy graphics on our quarters. Like, so much variation with our quarters, but that's the only thing that changed, and everything else is...
Why aren't we changing nickels? Why aren't we changing dimes? What's going on with that? Yeah. Well, and remember the gold dollar coin? It had Sacagawea on it. It had
Where'd it go?
What happened? What is going on here? Like, why do we do those some of those little things? Yeah, people were collecting the quarters, and they were trying to get all 50 states. I know my mom and dad, they had, like, a little booklet, and you tried to have it. Like, why? Like, why can't you do that with a 20? Why can't you do it with a 10? Like, why are we sitting around kind of just like, no, just the quarters. That's it. That's the only die we're going to make. And it makes me wonder, like, if you work for the U.S. Treasury or Mint, are you just like, you're so angry about the quarters? Like, you're just like, well, yeah, that's where all of the fraudulent, you know, coins come from, are the quarters. And you're just like, oh my gosh, like, Dale, just calm down. Like, we were just trying to have some fun. Nobody knows about New Hampshire. They wanted to put a little image on there. Let them do that. Like, my gosh. And so, yeah, and then the most recent was, what, Harriet Tubman, right, to go on the 20. A lot of people were wanting that to happen. I don't know if there was still voting or their voting process. I don't know what's going on with it. But that was the most recent thing I heard with our money was that. And I don't even think that's happened yet. And so it's just like, dude, we need cooler money. We need cooler money. Like, I don't know. I just want to be able to say something other than Benjamin's. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want to be able to say. Something other than Lincoln's, Benjamin's. Like, I want to be able to say another name, you know, like, yeah, got to bring my stack of Tubmans, got to bring, you know, whatever it may be. That's what I'm looking for. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But no, their money, pretty good. It's got the colors on there. They do have coins as well, which I figured out throughout some of these countries, having coinage. Different. Paper money, easy to do. Coinage, you gotta have like a mint. You gotta have a die. It's kind of crazy. And then their population, one, beautiful people. Look at that. Their population, 21.4 million. Yeah, so 21,473,000. It is 60th in the world among countries. Mm. So pretty good. There's like 100 and, I don't know, there's like 200 and some odd countries. So yeah, pretty good to be in the top 100. And then their land area, oh boy, 1,240,000 square kilometers, which is about 478,841 square miles. So lots of land area. And half of it, at least, is desert.
Do you know if, like, compared to, like, maybe another country, or what, give me... If you can, give me like a visual in my head, if you can.
Like what the size is? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's 23rd among all countries, right?
Oh,
and it's the eighth largest in Africa, right? So if I had to guess, this is probably like a combo of states, right? So this is probably like North and South Carolina, right? Like I bet that's what this is. It's like a North South Carolina. Or, like, I don't know about Dakotas are deceivingly big, you know, because they're in the West. The states in the West are always so much bigger. And so, yeah, that's kind of what we're looking at is a combo. We're looking at an American combo meal of states here that are up against each other. But it is 478,000 square miles.
Gotcha. So,
yeah, if you're anybody Googling out there, that's where it is. You can correct me. They're like, well, Devin, it's a West Virginia and a Virginia and part of Maryland. I'm like, okay, fine. And then we get to their languages. Oh, my gosh. Mali and their languages is crazy. So Mali is a multilingual country. The languages spoken there reflect ancient settlement patterns, migrations, and its long history. Ethnologue counts more than 80 languages. Of these, French is the official language, and Bambara is the most widely spoken. Altogether, 13 of the indigenous languages of Mali have the legal status of national language.
They have 13? So they have 13 national languages.
13. Could you imagine Billy Bob or Jim Bob going over to Mali and being like, well, there should be one language. And then it's like, no, Jim Bob, I hate to tell you this. Do you know French, Bambara, Dogon, Fofaldi, Modern Standard Arabic, Bambara, Bomu, Bozo, Mamara, Manikankan, Sonink, Songhe, Sinyara, Tamashek. Oh yeah, the list keeps going. X, I don't know if it's Sa, like a Chinese X, Sasongs, and then African French, Hassaniya, Arabic, and then signed languages, Francophone, African Sign Language. So it's that French, African Sign Language.
I've never seen that before. That, it makes me think that the people are, you know, pretty, not, I wouldn't say territorial, but they like are very tribal and they keep to themselves, right, and maybe villages, not mingle as much. I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Village. And I think the other thing, they hold on to their, like, their history and their culture, right? Mm. Like, maybe they intermingle quite a bit, but it's like, we're not picking up some of your traditions now. Why? Well, we got our own little village over here. We're fine with ours. We're still going to trade, though, right? And it's like, yeah, we can still trade. Just, we're going to speak, you know, Francophonic African Sign Language, and you guys keep doing your thing, like, whatever it may be. And so, yeah, that's, like, kind of the thing. But, no, I mean, I think they were saying the main language for a long time was Bambara. That's, like,
Bambara,
the big one. And so that's the other thing. 21 million people, so 60th in the world. They have that many languages. I cannot imagine how many people in that country actually know multiple languages. Like, I bet there's a lot of people there that know multiple languages. And I don't know multiple languages. I know bits and pieces of Spanish, Italian. I'm still working on it. Like, dude, like, and that's the thing is I think that's like another, like, one of those, like, I had no culture is like, you can speak a lot of different languages. Like, you get it, right? And so it's, yeah, that's like crazy to me. That's like, man, oh man. And 80 different languages. Whew. I can't imagine like calling a place and you're just like, they start speaking French and you're from, I don't know, maybe the North region is less French. So you're just like, oh, dang, I got to whip out the French. Here we go. And you just got to start going in that. That's, yeah, that's crazy.
Have you ever come across anyone from Mali?
I have not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, there was another country, Vanuatu, had a population of like 300,000, right?
Damn. Yeah,
and so same thing with Mali. Like, there's 21 million. But I haven't come across anybody from Mali. I've come across somebody from Nigeria, come across from South Africa, right? But, like, yeah, you meet somebody from Mali, that is, I say this, and I don't mean it as like a you're going to go, I don't know, collect them all or something, but it's one of those things where it's like, that's a rare person to see outside of their own home country. Like, yeah, if somebody says, I'm from Mali, you can be like, oh, do you speak French or Bambara? And then two, you can be like, man, so what you doing? What are you doing out here? Like, you're a rare person to see, you know? You are special. That's what they mean by everything in the world, right? So, yeah. And then if they say they're from the capital city of Bamako, that is their largest city and their capital. It is in the southern part of the state. Or the nation, sorry. It is in the southern center part. And yeah, obviously by a river, right? Like, gotta have that water source, gotta have it going. And it seems like a majority of the population live in Bamako. I didn't get an exact estimate, but a lot of buildings. A lot of water, got a feeling they're pretty close to there. But yeah, so far that's just the background of Mali, right? That's the day-to-day of old Mali there. But the influences on their cuisine, yeah. Oh, this is, yeah, that's a fun one. So here's this. This is an interesting quote from Mali. I try to go over an interesting quote. Here, Gastro Obscura, a food adventurer's guide. Let's open to, Jesus, what page? There it is. Yeah, 185. So here it is. This is the interesting quote. It's actually an event. It is Sacred Fishing Frenzy at Lake Ontago in Mali. Yeah. Oh, I moved ahead a picture. I got to go back. There we go. So as we can see from our smiling friend here with a basket, fishing is illegal at Lake Ontago except for one day a year. One day. That is it. When thousands of men gather at the shore waiting for the gunshot that signals go, carrying baskets, the men rush the shallow, muddy lake and capture as many catfish as they can, using just their hands. The scene is dense and chaotic, but it doesn't last long. After about 15 minutes, all the fish in the lake have been scooped up, and the ritual is over for another year. The Ontago fishing frenzy is a tradition of the Dogon, a Malian ethnic group who inhabit the country's central Mopti region. The Dogon consider the lake sacred because it's a rare oasis in the Sahara, and for a time it provided year-round fishing. Since desertification reduced the lake to its current small size, the annual ritual offers a fair chance for Dogon from all over Mali to come together and capture food from the lake. Women are prohibited from participating. The frenzy takes place during the dry season when the water is low and the fish are easy to capture. After the lake has been emptied, all the fish are presented to an elder from the nearby village of Bamba, who distributes them fairly among the participants. So, yeah.
So, that's pretty interesting that they have this event, and then at the end of it, it all kind of like, whatever's collected gets distributed evenly?
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah. You know why? Because they're good people.
Yeah.
That's why. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh, in the U.S., there would be one dude that looks like The Rock who's running right through the middle of everybody trying to capture the biggest fish they can, and they wouldn't even show it to the elder. They would just be like, this is mine, goodbye, and they'd hop away in their, I don't know, their Dodge whatever, and they'd be gone. We'd never see them again, you know? And these people are nice. They're like, hey, did you guys all capture one? Yeah, let's put it out on a table. Let's divvy it up. Like, we got to do this. We're all in this together. And it's like, yeah, smiling dudes like, I caught the biggest one. I just want bragging rights. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I just realized that my capitalistic mind had me confused when you ended it with that. I'm like, they do what?
They distributed. Why?
Evenly?
Like, evenly? Fairness? What? No. Yeah. Every now and again, you have to let the squeals of the capitalistic pig kind of go and rear back in the back hollows, right? You gotta let it fade. Yeah, no, it is. It's crazy. They're just good people. Like, and the women are prohibited, but at the same time, like, it's basically a huge mud pit. Like, I don't think you're gonna have that much fun doing it. Not to say, you know, they shouldn't participate. I mean, maybe they should if they really wanna, you know. But at the same time, it's like you're gonna get an even distribution. All is well. And it is kind of crazy that it used to be this year-round fishing thing, and they were like, although it is sad, we're basically losing our lake, let's make an event out of it. Let's make the best of what we got. People of Mali, man, they get it. They get it,
yeah.
Right?
And I honestly wonder, like, how if they're able to, you know, keep the lake safe, you know, have no like trespassers coming in.
Yeah.
People just come in like late at night. No one's watching. I'm gonna go try to get some fish.
Right.
I don't want to poke holes into their thing.
Right.
I think it's a beautiful event. I wish, hopefully, one day I can just be there, be a spectator. Maybe they'll tell me to catch a catfish. That'd be hella dope. I would love to catch one and present it to the elder and be like, I'm glad I could be here to do this with y'all, you know?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And if they allow that, I don't know.
I know. Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, you might have to have like an ID card and you're showing it and they're just like, you're not from around here. You're just like, what do you speak of? I am from Bamako. What's going on? And they're like, yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing is like, I think it's like, one of those things where being at an event like this, like even just the picture, looking at it, like there are so many people there. And so like, yeah, just everybody divvying up the fish, doing what they, you know, they got stations with guys with those fish fillet knives and they're just descaling stuff, taking the skin off the catfish. Yeah. Like I bet it is a rip roaring good time. Like this guy's smiling the whole time he's doing it. Like, it's got to be great, you know? And that's the thing. Like, yeah, like you were saying, I think here, I don't know. I think that, I don't know. I don't want to put past judgment on folks, but I just, I grew up in the Midwest. I know how they'd be like, let's get our trucks in the lake, and then we'll see how many get in the back of the truck by the time we flip it around. And we're just, I'm like, God dang it. You know, Cletus is gone again, and he's in his truck trying to ride down to get fish, and all he's going to do is smush them in the mud. Cletus. Anyway, but their influences on their cuisine, obviously they've got some fish, freshwater. They are landlocked. But the cuisine in Mali includes rice and millet as staples of their food culture, and it's heavily based on cereal grains. Grains are generally prepared with sauces made from edible leaves, such as spinach, sweet potato, and baobab. Yeah. B-A-O-B-A-B. So if anybody knows, baobab, I think. Baobab, I would assume, with a tomato peanut sauce. The dishes may be accompanied by pieces of grilled meat, typically chicken, mutton, beef, or goat. Yeah. Yeah. They're cooking out some good stuff. Yeah.
Tomato peanut sauce, I don't know if you've had that too many times, but I feel like there's been a lot of dishes in the Filipino culture that uses tomato peanut sauce in different dishes. And that makes me look forward to trying this. I mean, this looks great right now, the picture you're showing.
Yeah, I think this one is the jollof. It's jollof rice, right? Mm.
Yeah, I've heard African that before. Rice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Gold Coast thing. They have the jollof rice. And jollof rice, I believe, like the original type of thing. I could be wrong. I'm not a historian. Sorry, everybody. But I'm pretty sure the reason for jollof rice was actually one of the better reasons why when African Americans were in the South, especially like South Carolina and all those things, they were able to grow rice is because they knew it from their native countries. And yeah, once they were here and they were enslaved, they knew how to grow rice in abundance. So you had Carolina gold rice, and that is based on like the jollof rice dish that they had. And us being, you know, former British people, we had no idea how to do rice. And so, of course, but yeah, that's like how the food spread. So once again, thank you, Africa. Like, I tell you, there's a lot of that stuff.
I went to South Carolina maybe, I can't even remember. If my roommates are watching, I went to a wedding out there for my roommate, and I can't remember when I went out there right at the moment, but I did end up picking a bag of golden rice because that was like a South Carolina thing. That was like, take it. You know, you're a tourist. You should grab some of these. So now that I know it's from, like, that's the history behind it, that makes it even more crazier to me that I have a bag of that
in my room. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of the rice culture, different things near New Orleans is also from, you know, slaveholders, what have you. They had the land around there, but also people from the Philippines, they were growing all sorts of stuff down there in New Orleans. Big community of Filipino folk that are down there that mainly were doing fishing. Yeah, they were doing fishing down there, freshwater and saltwater. And then they were doing the rice and everything else. Like, they were doing all sorts of stuff in New Orleans. They had too many things, you know? I'm telling you. Yeah. They go everywhere. And, of course, in typical American fashion, we gave nobody credit. And so that's what happened. And it takes historians to go back and be like, oh, yeah, no. No. White people did none of this. Like, nope, not at all. Yeah. And it's like, oh, dang. But, yeah. So the comfort food dishes here, this first one, these are actually, it's like a pasta. It is a grained pasta. It's called Timbuktu and Gao Kata pasta. In Timbuktu and Gao, kata is an unusual kind of pasta made with local wheat flour. It is produced by women who also make other delicious foods, such as bread, wadhiha, tukasa, and tukalu. And loutre, which is beef sausages enriched with various spices and garlic. In order to make cotta pasta, the women first form a ball of dough, then tear off small pieces and roll them between two fingers. The thin, short threads of pasta are dried in the shade for 24 hours, then toasted in a pan until they develop a brownish-yellow color. The pasta can be eaten immediately, but if it's not the case, it can also be stored in jars or bags. Traditionally, cotta is cooked in a sauce made with tomatoes, spices, dried fish, and either mutton or beef. This advanced dish is made by women, either for important guests or special occasions, such as Maulud and Eid al-Fitr and Ramadan. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So the it's like preparation. Vermicelli, you know?
Got you. Got
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just listening to the prep behind it to create it, and I'd be thinking, like, do they have a lot of fast food places out there, or this is, you know, right. normal, like, you know, cooking, like, oh, I'm going to prepare dinner for tomorrow today, and then, you yeah. know, because I know for me, that's not what I think about. I'm like, let me just put something in the air fryer and, like, eat that for tonight, yeah. but... Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's special occasions, right? So guests and special. So if you were walking out there and you went out there for that huge lake fish thing and you were like, yeah, I went into town, got my fish, got my fair cut. And then you walked back and then some, you know, gal caught your eye and you were like, hey, what's going on? You want to hang out? And they're like, yeah, sure. Here, you can come over and we'll have a dinner and all this stuff. You're like, sounds pretty good. I bet you Mama miscaught your eye would be making this dish. Yeah.
Now I'm going to know. I'll be up to game. And like, oh, I think I've seen this before.
Yeah,
and
you're like, oh, yeah, is your mom making Timbuktu gaukata pasta? Is that what it's happening? Yeah. Yeah. And she's just like, you've heard? You're like, oh, I heard this word. I totally know what this is. I'm guessing she's rolling it between the two fingers, correct? Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, that's what you got to do, you know? You're yeah. whipping out the knowledge, man.
It's and I'll like, be man. Saying... Thank you, Devin, for this.
Yeah. Wow. Devin and Culinary Convo teaching me things so that I can get better acquainted with others around the world. And then shortly thereafter, you're just like, this is just great food. This is super good food. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, it's like vermicelli. That was what I was thinking whenever I saw it. It's like rice pasta. And it's like, oh, yeah, like risotto or like a vermicelli. Like, yeah, yeah. And see, I can go with that. And then this next one here, the Dogon people, they are having a good old time with Dogon Somme. So Dogon people live in a chain of red sandstone cliffs, which run from north to south across the Mali Plain. They have dug their houses out of the rock and built huts. Next to these houses are fields where the locals produce shallots. Their primary source of income, sold fresh or dried, these shallots are beloved at markets due to their sweetness and unique flavor. The Dogon people, however, also produce a variety of vegetables, cereals, and legumes. The women use flowers, leaves, and fruit of each plant to make a variety of condiments called somme. Kama is the powder made by grinding dried sorrel. So like sorrel mushrooms, I would think. Could be actually the leaf sorrel. Anyway, sorrel leaves. See, I answer my own question. Porkama is made by grinding dried leaves of a local tree known as nere. So jabu oannan is made by grinding dried shallot pellets, then roasting the powder in peanut oil, while gangaju oan, I think it's a O. I think that, yeah. Oannan is a powder of dried okra. There are also arapuanu, the powder from baobab leaves, and local pepper known as keberopuana. All of these condiments are staples of Dogon cuisine used in soups, sauces, on vegetables, or on meat. So really, it's kind of a two-parter here. One, they are living like, what was it, it's not the Navajo, is it? That have the dugout rock sandstone like houses. I'm trying to remember. In the Southwest, American Southwest, yeah.
This is our classrooms did teach us this part.
Yeah.
At some point.
We knew this at one point. Yeah. But one, they're just like them. They've got these sandstone houses that they've created. I got a feeling those are not going anywhere anytime soon. Like, it's, you know. And then on top of that, they're growing their own food out there. And yeah. They've got condiments that go on pretty much anything and everything, just like a hot sauce, just like a pasta sauce. Yeah, blending the cultures, but they're just like, we're making our own out here. Like, come and join. And I will say, their vegetables and meat that they're going to have, the okra, once again, southern staple, right? Like, yeah, that's, I tell you, I'm liking Molly. Molly's doing an okay job here. This next one. We got, Mafe. That's what M-A-A-F-E, Mafe. It goes by Mafe, Mafe sauce de arachide, tiga de guana, tiga de gana, sauce zara, African peanut stew, and then groundnut stew.
Mm.
Yeah, all of those. This is a traditional stew, occasionally also referred as a sauce or soup. It is enjoyed throughout the West and Central Africa, but it is believed it originated among the Bambara people in Mali. It comes in numerous regional variations, but each version is created with roasted peanuts. They are ground into flour and make a basic sauce for the dish. The list of additional ingredients is extensive, and it typically includes tomato paste, fish or meat, usually beef, lamb, goat or chicken, various vegetables, numerous spices such as ginger, turmeric, coriander, or cinnamon. The variations often differ in texture and consistency, while the side dishes are regionally influenced and may include anything from rice to couscous to fufu, which is cassava, pounded, or sweet potatoes.
Yeah. Mm. Dude, yeah. I need a Mali restaurant to be open near me now, you know?
Yeah, I need Mali on Grubhub. That's what I'm needing right now. I'm needing to get some of that. I tell you what, man. That easily sounds like your great, like, curry soups, peanut soups, like, all that stuff. Easily. And throw that on some rice.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, get me a Mali. They can just call it Mafe. I'll take it. Just call the restaurant Mafe. I'm like, all right, Mafe on Grubhub. Here we go. Yeah, those recipes, tasteatlas.com. Make sure that you guys are checking the Taste Atlas out. Anytime you're like, I'm going to travel somewhere and I want to figure out their food, go to Taste Atlas. They'll be like, hey, you know, in Virginia, there are 7 different types of cheeses. Yeah, and you're going to be like, that's boring. Until you go to a grocery store and then somebody's trying to shovel cheese at you, you're like, that is not a Virginia Vorneau. Yeah, I know my cheeses. And then you can, you know, it's all good. It's all good. But the next one here, through Cape Tocosa, or Cape Tucasa, that's what it is, capetucasa.com, going over Malian food. This is jollof rice. Yes, jollof rice is a very common and popular dish in West Africa, including Nigeria and Uganda and Mali. Jollof rice is known as kwankwan and is prepared with either white or brown rice, fish, and vegetables. Yeah.
That's looking mighty fine right now, man. And
yeah.
I haven't eaten like in a while, so every picture you're showing me, I'm just like, just getting ready for dinner. Inspiring me.
Exactly. Yeah. It's building up that inner chef in you. Oh, that's like, yeah. I could make some jollof rice. I believe I have some frozen shrimp somewhere. Either that or I could use the fish that I caught while I was over in Mali. Yeah, I'm telling you. Yeah. And the next one here, you got, I believe it's pellet yassa or chicken yassa. Oh, yeah. Caramelized onions there. Good
on
chicken. Yeah. What's more satisfying? Yeah. What's more satisfying than a mouth-watering savory dish? The answer, it doesn't exist. Yeah, it does. Paulet Yasa is incredible Malian comfort food that will have you craving for more after one bite. Paulet Yasa is prepared by marinating the chicken in an onion and lemon sauce and then cooking it with extra onions. The result is a tender, juicy, and spicy meal with a kick of sweetness. This yummy Malian dish can be served with rice or couscous. I would like it with some couscous. I could do some couscous on that.
I don't remember what couscous is like. I feel like I've seen it. I tried
beads,
it.
Little tiny beads, yeah. But it's like pasta ricey in a way, but it's like pasta. It's soft, right? Cooks in like 5 minutes, right? Like gotcha. You boil water, you pour it in, you put a lid on it, take it off the heat, and it goes. And then there's like Israeli pearl couscous, and those are like the big like ball like couscous. People put them in desserts, salads, all sorts of stuff. Oh,
got you.
Yeah. That's couscous in the picture, actually, I believe. Yeah
it looks like it. I was going to say, I think the thing that excites me the most about this dish is just like it's lemon pepper. I mean, not lemon pepper, but lemon chicken with caramelized onions. And that just sounds like a recipe for success.
Yeah. Acidity, savory. Then you got the meat of the chicken. Go chicken thigh. I think everybody knows that. You go chicken thigh. And then... Yeah, you're set. You're golden. Once again, restaurant, Mafe, it'll be all Mali food, Grubhub.
This is your Grubhub. Menu right here. Everything on Culinary Convo. This could be your menu.
Right. This could be your menu. Everything here. What are we doing, guys? Like, Grubhub, call me. We'll figure this out. If you pay me enough money, I will travel to Mali, all expenses paid. You will pay them. And I will go and figure this out for you guys. I'm telling you.
Easy.
Easy. This is like stupid easy, guys. Like, come on. Yeah. But this next one. Ala Badja, or Badja. It is a traditional specialty food in North Mali. It's traditionally prepared during Eid celebrations, such as the sacrifice Eid, where the meat of the sacrificed animal is used to prepare the dish. A sacrificed animal. Whoa. Ala Badja is a dish that consists of a mixture of rice, minced meat, a generous amount of butter at can fix a lot of things, and dried dates. All the ingredients are mixed up, then put to simmer for an hour, and voila, the Ala Badja is ready. So you got the sweetness from the dates, right? You got your meat, your minced meat, and then obviously, yeah, the generous amount of butter. I mean,
oof,
how much are we talking? like a couple sticks? We talking Paula Deen numbers? Like, what are we talking here? I think that if I had to, I bet I could eat this like whole pan if enough was given. You know, I think I could do it.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever had it's like a shrimp place where they just give you shrimp by the pound with like the sauces. Is there a place like that?
Yeah. Boils, yeah. Right? Like boils and stuff like that. Yeah.
So when they're talking about generous servings of butter, that's what makes me think about the sauce. Like, is it like that? There. Where it's just like crazy buttery sauce and...
they're giving you the little styrofoam cups of just butter. That's it. And you're just...
Yeah.
Oh man.
Give it to me. Yeah. I love that shit.
Yeah. That's the good stuff, man. And not only that, but if they do the nice little touch, and you can see it on the top here, parsley, just a little or cilantro, you know. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. Butter and that, you have me sold. Yeah. I'm telling you. Oh, man. Ala Badja. And then the next one here, we're getting into desserts.
Let's go. Right.
The sweets. This one here, bouilli. Yeah, or bouillie. Something like that. B-O-U-I-L-L-E. Bouilli, I believe. Or bouillie. I don't know. I don't speak Bambara or French for that matter. I'm doing a cooking thing, and I don't know French that well. It is a recipe for disaster when it comes to pronunciations. but if you want to try it,
though.
I know. Yeah. Effort. Yeah, give me an E for an effort. if you want to try a new twist on a traditional Malian dessert, then this is it. The bouillie, or burned milk tart. It is like a burnt cake.
Thick cookie dough swirled delicately with custard filling centers. The Malian Buil cake is made with simple ingredients, which are milk, eggs, butter, sugar, and vanilla.
Just a burnt cake, though. Yeah. So is it like, is it kind of crusty, like sweet crust around it?
So that's what I'm guessing. So like, looking at the picture here, like this top edge crust, crusty for one. So like, it's got to get a little toasty down there. And then down in the pan, I'm seeing brown. So like, there's gotta be, it's gotta be pretty toasty down there. And then the custard, I gotta think, you know, probably quite a bit of goat milk, right? So it could be kind of cheesecakey, you know? Yeah. Have it's a little bit like... of like a smoky flavor from the burntness, whatever it may be. Yeah.
All about it.
I know. Yeah. I'd come in there and just be like, all right, well, I know you made your Timbuktu and Gaukata pasta, but I believe the dessert you guys are providing, they're like, oh, yes, we're having buil. You're like, oh, the burnt cake? They're like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, 34 knows about the burnt cake. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's what's happening, man.
I would ask a special request with some ice cream, maybe a scoop of ice cream on the top, just for good measure.
Yeah, you're like French vanilla. It's got to have the little black things in it. You know? French vanilla, ice cream, little dollop. It'll put her over the top. Don't worry about it.
Sure.
Yeah. And then the next one here, oh, man. These are masa. So M-A-A-S-A. They are a sweet treat from Mali made with rice flour and millet flour, the two most common grains in the region. I first learned about it when I spent a week cooking. This is through Food 52. This person traveled to Mali for a gluten-free pancake donut. That is what a masa is. It is a pancake.
Gluten-free?
Gluten-free pancake donut. Yeah.
That sounds crazy, and I feel like a lot of people would appreciate that here in America. Come on, Grubhub, let's do this.
Grubhub, come on. Postmates, be a mate. How about it? Come on. We need more Mali food. We need this pancake gluten-free stuff. That way all of our friends can enjoy, right?
Exactly.
I'm telling you. But yeah, it is. It's a mix between a pancake and a donut, which... why haven't we done that at all in the U.S.? We have pancakes. We have donuts. We've never made this.
Dude, we made a burger out of two donuts, and we can't do pancake.
We can't do masa. Pancake donut. We can't do masa. We can do regular masa that makes tortillas, but we can't even do this type of masa. Oh, my God. You know, and it's especially delectable with a glass of milk. This could be as American as apple pie, and we're not doing it over here. Why? I'm blaming Grubhub. And remember, Grubhub, if you want to stop this slander, just contact me at culinaryconvopod@gmail.com, and we can fix all of that.
Please, one contract, please, Grubhub.
Yeah, please. Please, Grubhub.
We're asking nicely.
yeah, we're being kind here, okay? Jeez. But to wash down, besides with a glass of milk for the donuts and what have you, you might be thinking, you know, hot desert heat. I need something nice and good to drink. We got ourselves Jablani. It is a Malian ginger juice. So I'm guessing like a ginger beer or a ginger ale type of situation.
Yeah. But orange a little bit?
Citrus galore. Like, that's what it's looking like. One of the most popular Malian drinks is Jablani. Jablani is a drink made from ginger, lemon, mint, and water. So lemon. Lemon, ginger, mint. Yeah. That sounds like a heck of a cocktail. Add some tequila, vodka, whatever it may be. Rum. Woo. Yeah. But,
So ginger, lemon, and mint. I'm probably going to collect all these ingredients, and I'll let you know how it sounds. I think it's simple enough. I don't want to make it simple, like, in my mind, but if I can grab those ingredients, put them together, I think we might have a winner. I'll start it. And Mali drinks. Let's start with Mali drinks, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you got to get the meal started, right? Mali drinks. And see, that's the thing. Like you were saying, it's kind of like, for us anyways, it's simple enough. I mean, those are all three things. I can get that in a grocery store. I know that for sure. So it's like, I think I might have me some Jablani, you know?
Yeah.
And when somebody's like, oh, what type of drink is that? Is that a I don't know, tequila sound right? No. I'm not. What? No. It is a Molly drink called a Jablani. They're like, what the heck? You're like, yeah, understand the world more. Grow up. Jeez. Yeah.
Get a life.
Yeah, get a life. Learn some things about other places, will you? Ugh. Man. And then they're like, well, does it even taste good? You're like, yes, it tastes amazing because people in Mali are nice. Do you know they divvy up fish evenly? Yeah. Unlike you, they're like, what? And you're like, yeah, personal attack now. All because you made fun of my drink. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I swear I'm going to try it. I'm going to put some tequila in it. And then if it just hides the alcohol so well, you just share it at a party. No one knows.
And see, that's the thing is some people would be like, you got to let it ferment, get some carbonation in there. Let's add some soda water. It'll be fine. Add some soda water. Get some lemon in there. Lemonade, ginger, mint. I'm telling you. And you can do, what is it, muddling, right? Where you put the mint leaves in the bottom and you grab like a little stir and you muddle it. That's always impressive. You're at a bar and you're like, yes, I want a gin and tonic. And they're like, oh, let me muddle your mint. And it's like, oh, my God. And you pay extra for that. You know?
I'm not as classy as you, Devin. I've never had that.
See, I'm not classy either. I just watch it from across the bar. I watch somebody else order it. I'm the one sitting back that's like, Jack and Coke, please. Small glass. Not the big glass. That's more expensive, right? Yeah, okay. Thank God. And then somebody's like, I'll have a gin and tonic. I'm like, oh, I got to watch this.
Yeah.
Are they muddling the mint? Oh, they're muddling the mint. Ooh, that's the good stuff.
You're like, you're doing it wrong. You're supposed
to. Yeah. I'm like, Jared, you got to go faster in your muddling technique. Jeez. They're like, more wrist. You got to rotate. Yeah. They're like, sir, is there something? No, you could make his drink better. That's what you could do. I'm telling you. And then the next one here, Malian tea. That's right. Mm. Yeah. Mali and tea is an everyday, all-day affair. It's the most popular drink in Mali. You can find it literally everywhere. Preparing and drinking tea in Mali is an elaborate process. There's no shortcut to preparing authentic Mali and tea. It can easily take 1 hour or even more to prepare it. Malians believe that the longer it takes to prepare, it is the tastier that it will be. Malian tea is served in 3 rounds. After each round, water and a generous amount of sugar are added to the teapot and boiled again. The first serving is usually bitter, and it's called death. The second serving is sweeter, and it's called life. And then the final serving is very, very sweet, and it's called love. Aww.
So you prepare this tea, and then when you pour it, you almost have 3 different drinks at the end, right? It seems like.
Yeah.
Death, life, and love. Wow.
I know.
So I wonder which one would be my favorite.
I know, right? Yeah. Mali's deep. They're just like, see, I know from it, like Chinese or Japanese tea culture, they do say like the more, I don't know if it's stewing, but like the more you basically like have the leaves soak, basically you pour out the first one and that's like your garbage one, right? It's like, it hadn't been sitting long enough. And they just basically, you're supposed to pour it over a teapet, I believe is what they call it. It's a little stone animal. It looks like a rabbit or a frog or whatever. And you pour it over the teapet. And then the second round is when it starts getting good. And it gets like darker every time, the more you let it sit, you know? And so they're probably using the same type of thing, except they're like, no. First one's death. Second one is live, but then the third one, love. Yeah, and then you're just like, wow, who knew I was gonna get, like, you know, do the right thing, but in tea, this is pretty great. You got the love hate type of thing going on the fingers. Like, I'm telling you, it's great. Yeah,
dude. Yeah, it seems like I'd totally be like, oh, you know, peace, love, and unity type thing.
I'm
yelling into it.
You just have one little cup, and you just take one sip, and you're like, oh, man, piece of life, man. Yeah. you're like, this is it just tastes so good. They're like, that's the death round. You're like, yeah, death. It's part of life, right? So
it's still good. It's still good, right?
Still good. Like, it's great.
I'm not the weird one, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not making a big deal out of this, am I? Yeah. Oh, man.
Like, dude.
Yeah, that's the way it goes, you know. You travel, you do the weird, awkward things, and they get to laugh at you, and that's okay, right? They get to laugh at you because they're like, oh, this guy coming from a strange land. And then you get to learn the whole death, love, and life thing, you know. It's, yeah, and you're like, I had this Molly tea thing, took all day, but it tasted great, right? Like, it was kind of crazy. Grabbed Starbucks and kicked its ass. Like, I'm telling you, it was good. Yeah. So it's, yeah. But, you know, traveling to Molly.
Dude. Yeah. What about it?
You want to know the cost first of traveling to Molly? Yeah.
Because honestly, I'm the kind of person that now that you've told me about Molly, I'll be like, in my mind, people ask me where you want to go in Africa. I'll be like, why not Molly? I learned about it a little bit. Let me go there.
Yeah.
How much it costs, man?
Yeah. Well, the cost is the least of your worries.
Okay.
Yeah. So the cost of traveling to Molly here, let me see here. So Kayak, that's who I'm using on this. Kayak right now is saying, oh, it's loading. Yeah, from Portland PDX. To Bamako or BKO Airport in Mali. Right now, see, it's like, it's having a hard time because it's like, how are you
thinking pretty hard.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing going to Mali? Yeah, so, okay. So here it is, the best flight. So the shortest amount of time for the best amount of money, 2,107 round trip, and it's 21 hours each flight. On average. Yeah. Dang. And that's the quickest flight as well as 2,107. And so the cheapest is 1,460, but then you're flying for basically 28 hours.
Sheesh.
Yeah. Yeah. That line right there that goes, that is a long line. That is... Whoa.
I'm almost surprised there's a flight from Portland straight down there.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive for Portland.
Yeah. That makes me think that there's like people from Portland who are looking to go to Molly. How does that happen? Where are these people? I need to know.
And it's just it looks like it's a straight shot too. It's not
just straight flying. Yeah. There's got to be layovers or something. There's like, you know, there's always something with that. There's got to be something. But no, I mean, yeah, for a cheap end $1,400 ticket and 28 hours, you're there. Now, the cost of traveling to Molly. So how much are you going to need for your trip to Molly? You've already spent like $2,100 whatever to get there in 21 hours. You should plan to spend around 16,000 West African francs a day, which is $24 in American dollars. Per day on your vacation in Molly. So the average daily price is based on expensive visitors. Past travelers have spent on average $6.72 American cents on meals for one day. So that's a lot of jollof rice. That's a lot of masa. And then $2.77 on local transportation. And the average hotel price in Molly for a couple is $22 a night. Yeah.
Not bad at all. You invest in the flight. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. You invest in the flight. You get there and your dollar goes far, you know?
Yeah.
Now, for 1 week, all your costs are $342.
One week for everything.
For everything. Spending one month in old Mali, then it is $960,000. West African francs, let me see with the conversion rate here. So what is it? 14,000 is like $22. Oh man. So that's like probably right around like $1,000.
Yeah, for 1 month?
Yeah, for 1 month. Sheesh.
Can I work good. Remotely out there?
I know. Yeah, get you a nice little, yeah, you can live in the sandstone area. See if they got an Airbnb out there.
Yeah, you know? I just got to get a satellite connection or something. Or, I need Starlink.
Right. Elon, you need Starlink. Let's do it. Yeah. Man. And see, that's the thing. Like, Starlink, that would work. That would, you know, living in a sandstone place like Mali, that'd be fine. The problem is the CIA, the World Factbook through the CIA.gov, they have a travel advisory for Mali. The U.S. State Department says that the U.S. Department of State is currently recommends that U.S. citizens do not travel to Mali due to crime, terrorism, and kidnapping. Consult its website via the link below for updates to travel advisories and statements on safety, security, local laws, and special circumstances.
Damn, so I need like Secret Service and bodyguard right. with me.
Yeah, so from my reading here, CIA, what have you, and the Department of State, basically what that means is if you say, hi, yes, one ticket to Mali, please, they're basically going to be like, you've just been added to a flight list. Like, you are being tracked. Like, do you know what you're doing by going there? Like, are you with television? Are you doing a documentary? Are you... I'm going because of the food. I was listening to Culinary Convo, and I want some Mali and tea. And then it's like, I don't think you know what you're doing there. Like, got a feeling kidnapping is down the line for you. Like, that's... oh, man. So, yeah, no, they got a rough go in Mali. They got a rough go. Really, the big two are crime and terrorism. So there's not a lot of industries. A lot of the folks who own land and are growing things and exporting things, they also kind of control the entire regions. So, yeah, it's a lot
Sounds
of that
about
stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of not too safe. Not too safe to go to Mali. That's why we need Mali restaurants on Grubhub. And Postmates, everybody. We want to enjoy their food, you know?
I'm going to do it, Devin, man. I'm going to go to Mali one day.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this recently, but I saw a picture of the lady who been to all 192 countries. And, like, she has a picture of, like, you know, welcome to whatever everywhere.
And I want to see the myself, welcome to Mali. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all
where
like,
is she from? Is she from the U.S.?
I want to believe. I believe she was an Asian lady. I don't want to get my information wrong. But I was just supremely surprised that somebody like. I feel like that's a dream for any traveler. It's like, right. Oh yeah, I want to see the world. Like, have you been this lady though, who's been to all 192 countries,
every single freaking country? Yeah. Like, what was her trip like to North Korea? What was that like? Man.
Hey, I don't know who she is. Yeah. I don't know what she does, but she must have enough money to be safe to go to all these countries they tell you not to go to because something might happen, you know? But good for her, man. Props.
Yeah. That's the other thing. How old is she? Is she a younger gal? Middle age?
No. She seemed like, at least based on the picture that I saw, maybe like mid-50s. So she's working on it for a while and... You know, it took her whole life to kind of do it, but
she might have hit the problem countries like really early on. So like your Afghanistan's, Ukraine, you know, Syria, those guys. Yeah. She might have hit those early, and then later on, just was like, yeah, I'm gonna pick off the easy ones here. So Canada. Yeah, Mexico. Like,
I can imagine the CIA just being like so well acquainted with her. Like, oh, it's just her. She just.
Are you talking about Susan? Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's been everywhere. She's been up and down the Gold Coast of Africa. She's been over there in China. She's been everywhere. She know Putin, I think. I don't even know. We don't know. We just talk to her every time she hits an airport. We're like, you here for pleasure? You here for work? What are you doing? And she's like, I'm just trying to hit all the countries. And I'm like, God dang, Susan. How many you got on here? Yeah. I mean, how many passports does she have? That's the other thing. Like the stamps and all that stuff.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah. That's what like a collection, man.
Yeah, the CIA knows. They got something on her. They got it. Ugh. But yeah, but otherwise, the last note of interest here for good old Mali, over 67% of Malians are below the age of 25.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. So this little like stratified graph that we're looking at here. Yeah. Like you get up above the age of like your 40s and it's like nobody's living past 40. Like hardly anybody is making it past 40 there. So
damn. Yeah, that's I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess if I go there when I'm 50, am I considered an elder in a way?
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be like treated, you know, a little bit. They're like always treating you like you're really fragile. Everywhere you go, there's somebody like behind you and in front of you like, oh. You're just like, no, guys, I'm fine. They're like, oh, no, we got it. We got it. I remember there was some comedian that said, you know, you're old whenever you fall down. And basically people around you go, no, don't get up. Like, don't get up.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a little funny.
Yeah. Because when you're young, they just ask, oh, are you all right? Right? But if you're older, they're like, don't get up now. Don't get up too fast.
Like, how old do you think I am right now?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what do you think? I'm ancient? Like, what's going on?
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, man, young folk out there in Mali. Yeah. Makes you wonder, like, kind of like what you mentioned with the Starlink earlier, like what type of tech and stuff that they're doing out there, what's going on. Yeah.
Dude, like the only, like, I was thinking about the fishing thing earlier. It's like, we haven't seen any, even like a TikTok video or a reel about like, group of people just going to a lake and grabbing all these fish. I think that'd be a crazy sight to see. Yeah. But yeah, maybe better or worse, they aren't connected like, you know, we are out here in America. But
yeah. They don't have a Facebook Zuckerberg type of situation where they're like, come to the metaverse and then you'll go back into the office. You're like, no, this is stupid. I'm going to the lake. I'm gonna get me some fish. You know, Mali gets it. Like I said, they get it. They're like, divvy it up evenly. We don't want any arguments. You know, we speak 80 languages. Just let us be, you know. Mm. And that, yeah, they're letting it live. And then on top of that, so this is what it says here. Mali has one of the youngest populations in the world. It says here that the country has a population of about, that at the time, it was 18 million in 2017. So, dang, they made 4 million people in like 4 years. That is crazy.
Something's happening. Something's
happening. Yeah. The Malian population is predominantly rural and roughly 10% are nomadic. In 2007, over 48% of Malians were less than 12 years old. And 49% were 15 to 64 years of age. The country has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the world, with a rate of about 106 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2007. So one in 10.
Damn.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I feel like they might have really mature and wise young people out there. kids who have to grow up real quick and maybe be head of their household. It seems like it.
Yeah. That's wild. Because mom I would say probably dad. Probably mom or dad. Yeah, one of them might be gone by the time you're in your teenage years, you know. Just depends on how young your parents were when you had kids. It's like, oh, dang. Like, yeah. Mm. And then Mali, it used to be one of the world's richest nations and was home to great emperors. Yeah. So Mali was historically a center of civilization, and Timbuktu University was one of the most popular ancient universities in Africa and the Middle East. While currently one of the world's poorest nations, it previously ranked among the wealthiest empires in the world. Mali was a gold-rich region, and Mansa Musa, the 10th emperor of the Kingdom of Mali, was one of the wealthiest individuals during the Middle Ages. And I was like, you know, Mansa Musa sounds familiar. So I did a little bit of digging, and at the factsinstitute.com, going over facts over Mali, I knew why his name was familiar. Mansa Musa, who was the king of the Mali Empire from 1280 to 1337, is believed to be the wealthiest man who has ever lived.
Hmm. Damn.
Yeah. Came from Mali, Africa, specifically Timbuktu.
I know I've heard Timbuktu a lot before.
Right.
But he looks like his range, 57, or like, yeah, 57 years of ruling.
Yeah.
That's been a great leader, I would hope.
Yeah. And see, that's what they're talking about with a lot of these countries. Like, Africa, yeah, man, they've had a rough last couple centuries here where you have people coming in, taking people out of Africa, but then also just colonizing everything, taking all their resources, doing all that stuff. And it's like, yeah, Africa used to be, you know, yeah. That means the richest man ever lived in Africa, in Mali.
And it's crazy that, like, even before this episode or before we got on, it's like, I don't know what Mali is or where it's at. And
right?
It is crazy to me that it was, like, you know, very rich in gold. And it's one of those places that just got drained by, you know, whoever, whenever it happened.
It was the center of civilization, and Timbuktu University was one of the most popular ancient universities. Wow.
That's wild.
So super educated, super rich, had crazy empire, richest man to ever live. And then today, one of the poorest countries and is, going for fish at the
once a year lake.
Yeah, once a year. It is crazy how things can change. Yeah. Dude. Yeah.
It makes me think whoever did it or whichever like lineage like did it, I don't know. Maybe they feel like they won now that Mali's where it's at. And that sucks. Like
that does.
Let's bring it back. Let's bring it back. And I do believe Africa's due for like a rise or some kind of change that makes them, you know, say we're here, we've been here. And hopefully we can see the rise of Mali again.
Totally. Talked to a gal named by Lula Day, Mogus, for her Ethiopian cookbook. And one of the things that she had in her book was Ethiopia was known as one of the cradles of civilization, the oldest Lucy, the oldest human remains were found there. So thousands of years old. And then Ethiopia is the only country in Africa that has never been colonized.
Wow.
Never.
That's wild.
Been colonized. That's wild. Yeah. That Italy has tried and they were unsuccessful. Yeah. And so it's like one of those things. There's all sorts of stuff in African history that, by golly, we need to know more of this stuff. Like, not only is it like crazy to understand it, but it actually gives you like a richer background into it. I mean, Timbuktu, like you were saying, it's like I've heard Timbuktu a million different. I don't know if it was a jingle. I don't know if it was something like Timbuktu. Like I have no idea. Or here to Timbuktu. I have no idea. And now we're realizing it's like, oh yeah, because it was like the heart of civilization in Africa, and it had one of the greatest universities in the world. And because the richest man who ever graced this earth lived there, it's like, whoa, like that is just what? Like grabs this little Ozark, Missouri brain and just blows it up, man. It's crazy. The last one here from Mali, the very last thing. This chart here, what it is showing that Mali is amongst the 10 most dangerous countries in the world, according to the International SOS Travel Risk Map. It has been assessed as carrying an extreme travel security risk. So it's not just the CIA. They're like, anybody, any country, be careful.
Do you think it's because they felt so wronged by the world? They're like,
oh, I bet.
If anybody else comes in here, it's game over for y'all. It's like,
game over for y'all. Yeah.
Maybe the last people they let in really messed them up, and they're like, actually, now we're never doing that again.
Totally.
I hope that's not the reason, but
I hope not. Yeah, it's like you were saying, it would make sense because like a generational trauma kind of thing, they're starting to pinpoint that it's not just like this physiological thing. It literally is a thing that's passed down of like, you know, my great-grandfather, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my grandfather, they all despise people who were not from here. I wonder why. And then for the U.S. anyways, we always shovel that off and we're like, oh, they were racists. That's why. But for these people in other countries who their family had always lived there, it's like, yeah, no, you got to connect the dots. There was colonization. There were things going, slave trade, all that kind of stuff was going on. There's a reason why those families are all like, yeah, no, we don't really trust the outsiders coming in.
Yeah.
And now it's limited resources, right? Like half of your country is in the Sahara Desert. Like, yeah, even though even they're crazier, growing things. Yeah. Yeah. Even though they're doing all these things like the lake, right? It's once a year. Like, that's it. We divvy it out evenly. We're not looking for more people to show up here and take more from us. Like, that's not what's going to happen. And so, yeah, it's kind of like what you mentioned. It's kind of a crazy thing to think about. It's, yeah. But Mansa Musa, Mali, they showed us a great time. You have Mansa, you got jollof rice, you got that ala badaja, you got the all that stuff. All that stuff, amazing. What the drink? We got to go back to the drink here. Yeah, Jablani. He's trying Jablani tonight. I'm gonna try to make Molly and tea, but I have to take off tomorrow to do that. So yeah, that's gonna be the big thing. And then where are we headed next on good old mapping the culinary world? We're headed to Iceland.
Nice.
Iceland.
That's
yeah.
not Greenland. Isn't
That's
it?
It's not Greenland.
Iceland.
Yeah, you got to remember it on the two different ways. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like, that's how every kid in the U.S., anyways, that's how we learn it is like Greenland is all ice and Iceland is all green. Like, that's the way we always try to get it. It's
hilarious.
Yeah. But no,
thank you, yeah. education system.
Right? Thank you again, American education system, for polishing off the good old knowledge that we have barely evolved to know. Yeah, this is just wonderful. But no, Iceland, the only thing I know about Iceland, very pretty country. I think I could be totally wrong. I could be lying so bad right now. But I thought I had heard that they had the most people per capita in the world strongman competition. I thought I had heard that at some point.
I got you.
Yeah.
The one thing I know about Iceland is back in, like, I want to say 95, 96, they had a pretty good Junior Olympics hockey team that faced against America's hockey team.
There,
I don't know
yeah.
if you know what I'm referencing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were mighty ducking around, man. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Iceland, man. They're always coming in, trying to take our hockey trophies.
Yeah. Coach Bombay, man.
Yeah,
you know,
Coach Bombay. Always had our back. And that's why we have been the junior hockey champs ever since the 90s. Yes.
USA, yeah. man. USA.
USA. Yeah. USA. Yeah. Oh, man. Good old. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I just remembered, what was it? The Flying V. That's what
oh,
they
yeah.
always did. Yeah. 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 And I used to think in my little, you know, like dumb head, like, yeah, I could be that good at hockey. Like, what are you? No, you can barely run the 50-yard dash. What do you think you're going to be doing a hockey? Come on.
Like, Mighty Ducks was that movie, though. It made us all believe we
yeah,
could be
it
hockey
made
players.
Us, yeah. We were like, it literally made my little brain go like, yeah, Americans are the best at hockey. And Canada was just like, what was that now? Like, you what?
Like, that was yeah. great propaganda film.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. That's what's going to be taught to our kids is like, yeah, well, your parents probably think that we're great at hockey. Well, we're not. The Mighty Ducks was a propaganda film. Like, yeah.
Hilarious.
Our kids come in. Coach Bombay was trash. We're like, you're trash. You don't understand. Goldberg was a crappy goalie until Coach Bombay taught him that he could be the best that he could be. And yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I just remember there was one kid that was like rich, hoity-toity, and everybody hated him, but he was like the best kid on the team.
Like, Adam Banks, man.
Yeah,
Adam Banks.
Banks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember. That was my favorite movie, man.
Yeah, see?
One of them. One of them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, man. See, that's why we have you on 34. You knew. You're like, I'm throwing that Mighty Ducks in there, man. We got it. Yeah. But no, I am so glad you followed me on my journey to Mali. Me and you, we hung out with some great folk, figuring out how to get fish out of a lake. We're going to have masa. We're going to have that pancake donut.
Definitely the drink. Definitely the drink.
Totally. Yeah, Chablanis. Yeah, we're going to be on, man. Get the muddled mint. We got to have it. Yeah, but no, I appreciate it. And again, everybody, go to 34questions.com or listen to 34 Questions anywhere you get your podcast, whether that's Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, whether Pocket Cast, Parcast. I don't care where you get it. Get it. Listen to 34 Questions. It is amazing. It's regular, everyday people giving you their perspectives, their view on their own lives. It is absolutely wonderful. And like you mentioned, 34, you're getting to talk to them, listen to all of it. And it's, yeah, it's great. And we get to enjoy it as well every time you post. It is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I'd hope so, man. And I want to thank you again, Devin, for coming by or to my podcast and allowing me to join you on this journey to Mali. You're a great host. You know, you definitely took care of me as we traveled over there on the plane. You paid for everything. So thank you so much.
Yeah. It was that whole CIA thing. You know, I stopped by. I was like, hey, is there going to be any issue going to Mali? They're like, a little. I'm like, I better get this ready.
I'm bringing 34 with me, though.
Yeah, I got 34 with me. He's my, like, security. He's the security guy. He understands Mali better than anybody. What does he know about him?
Timbuktu.
Yep. Mansa Musa. He knows it. He's got it. They're like, you going to that festival at that lake? We're like, maybe.
No, the thing is, we should have brought Susan with us. Yeah. She's been everywhere. She's our tour guide.
Yeah. That's all you have to do to get by the CIA is just mention that woman's name. You know Susan? Yeah, I know Susan too. Yeah. We're going to Mali. It's fine. Totally fine.
Oh, man.
Don't worry about it. That whole security thing. We got it. We got it figured out.
Hilarious, man.
You got anytime somebody does the wink and the finger guns at the same time, automatically it's like, oh, that guy's got it covered. He's got it. Yeah. Yeah.
I trust that guy.
I trust that guy. He's going to do good things. Oh, man. But yeah, we will see everybody next time on Mapping the Culinary World in Iceland. Everybody check out 34 Questions. Wonderful podcast. Humanity in your ears. Thank you, 34, for joining me again. And we'll see everybody next time. Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you in Iceland.
Much love, y'all.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transition, and outro music. Thank you.